Welcome everybody back to the podcast, and today we got a special guest. We got the one and only Daniel West.
Sup? How's it going? Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, everyone's clapping for you. So, we got to talk about the NBA draft today. Some surprises, some not so big surprises. Let's start with you know, you're from LA, well, Pasadena. How do you feel the Lakers did in this draft?
Close enough. I think they got the best out of a okay situation. And now I'll be honest with you, Tyson. First of all, I am, when it comes to drafts, I'm mixed. I think that it's a fun event where we get to, you know, read all these names and say these names, everyone claps. But I feel like we don't really know what's going to happen for like a year or two. So in some ways, I think the best way to look at a draft is to say, all right, let's just come back in a year and see how well we did, almost like, you know, a test or something like that. So judging just off that, I think the Lakers did pretty well. First round, Dalton Knecht, I'd heard of him. Oddly enough, I'm a bit of a Tennessee sports fan. That's a long story. I have no connections to Tennessee, but I like him. So I'd heard of him. He seems to shoot pretty well, so that's a good pickup there. And then the whole Bronny James thing. I'm sure we'll get into it. But I don't hate it as much as I would in other years, because this is not a draft where we said, that guy right there, he's the number one pick. That guy right there. So I kind of get it. I kind of understand just saying, hey, we've got the 55th pick in the draft. You know what we're going to do? Just take a flyer on a guy who is the son of the guy who's kind of led our franchise away from being irrelevant. So yeah, there's some nepotism there. Yeah, it's a little awkward and he probably didn't deserve to go, but you know what, name me another player that they could have picked at 55, you know? So I'm fine with it.
Yeah, you're totally right, because I mean, this draft class definitely not that stacked compared to some other NBA draft classes. No. But Dalton Knecht fell all the way down to 17, and I thought he was going to be picked way higher, so I think that was a good steal for the Lakers.
And yeah, and I heard part of it was because... Oh, sorry, go on.
No, you got it.
No, I heard part of it was because he's older.
Yeah, I feel like most of this draft class is older, though, because of COVID, the COVID year. So, got an extra year of eligibility.
Yeah, we'll see for sure.
And then the Clippers did not have a first-round pick, but they're doing some things outside of the draft. They just signed James Harden back for 2 years, $70 million, and then Paul George drama's going on. What do you have to say about that kind of stuff?
Oh man. So let's go back to 2019. Well, let's go back even further. The Clippers have been a joke for most of my life. So you have the Chris Paul trade and everything that goes along with the Lakers thinking they got him, and then he ends up with the Clippers. And for the first time in my life, save for like one season where Baron Davis and I think it was Sam Cassell led them to lose to the Suns in the playoffs, but people are like, the Clippers are kind of competent. They've been a bad franchise. So you have the Lob City years, and in my opinion, I don't think they win the title in 2015. I don't even think they make it to the finals in 2015, but I think that you at least don't choke against the Rockets, make it to the conference finals, lose to the Warriors, and everyone can go home and say, we got the most we could out of this team. But anyway, they don't get over the hump. They've never made the conference finals to this point. And Kawhi Leonard just comes off the Raptors championship with the Spurs. I thought that it was a great move to get Kawhi. I also thought that because you're the Clippers, because you haven't gotten to the conference finals, because you've done basically nothing over your entire history, I liked trading for Paul George. And for a few minutes, as an LA basketball fan, I was like, this is great. And then I saw that SGA was included in the trade. And he was only a rookie, but I was saying, ooh, I don't like that. Because after Chris Paul left, the big thing the Clippers had been saying, people in the organization, outside the organization, had been saying, we need a point guard. We need a point guard. We haven't gotten a point guard. They get a point guard. I'm like, this is it. This is the future. Build around him. I don't care whether he's, you know, what he turned into or not, just build around him. You got a point guard. So when I saw he was gone, I said, ooh, I don't know about that. But I was still fine with the trade. So here we are, what, 6 years later? And personally, I think it's time to end the experiment. Kawhi Leonard made it to the finals with the Raptors, gave them the title, and no one has been healthy since. Paul George is injured. When Paul George is healthy, Kawhi is injured. And I know that they don't have very many draft picks, but at this point, I think I would say do something like the Nets did or the Celtics did when they broke up the big three, because I don't see a path forward with a team that's just continuing to get older, doesn't have any assets to speak of, and I don't think they're close when you look at the and people say, yeah, they were the healthiest team. When they were healthy, they were one of the best teams in the league. I'm like, yes, but when have they been healthy? When have we seen those two guys playing together in the playoffs for any extended period of time? So health is an aberration at this point. So I don't think you build around it. I would have liked to seen them trade something for Paul George, because you gave up a lot and all you have to show for it is one conference finals. Yay. But I just don't like the path they're going down. I'll be honest.
Yeah, I see them talking with the Warriors, Paul George is, about a possible trade, but I don't know if the Clippers are going to accept it.
We'll see. We'll see. And the James Harden part of it, I'm like, oh, okay, sure. Let's run it back. But what's going to be different this time? What are we just saying? Let's hope that for the first time they all stay healthy together. And then the business side of it, if you add into this, you know, they're building the new arena building the new arena in Inglewood, which hopefully I'll get to see at some point. So I do understand the idea that you want to go in there with a product that's not, hey, you want to see these young guys and see us rebuild. I get that part of it, but they're just getting older. The team has been old for how long now? I just don't see it.
And they don't have any draft picks to really get those young players to not make the team old. I mean, they didn't have a first round pick this year, so we'll have to see. With the Clippers.
Terrence, go on. Sorry. I mean to interrupt you.
Well, I was just going to ask you if you knew anything about their second round pick, because I don't, so.
No idea. No idea at all. I know one of their recent picks, Terrence Mann, he's been pretty good for him, but we'll see. You know, is he a point guard? If not, I would be.
He's a shooting guard.
This is my other problem. Is they have so many. Every time I look up, I'm like, oh, great, another wing player. You know, as if Kawhi and Paul George wasn't enough. You know, how about you look and try to get a ball handler? Until they traded for Harden, you know, and Westbrook was there. I watched them, and the offense just feels very kind of stagnant at times. And I know you can win with ISO ball, and Kawhi won a title, you know, playing a certain way, but. At some point, you know, you went from being a joke to the Clippers getting a point guard.
Yeah, and Kawhi obviously getting injured pretty much every season now. I mean, he's got to call it quits at some point, and it's probably going to be in the near future.
Yeah, we'll see. But, and he's had a good career, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. He's had a good career. Just the injuries lately have definitely hurt obviously the Clippers' chances of doing anything. Like, they lost first round to the Mavs. Just hasn't been much of anything playoff wise for the Clippers.
No, but then I don't hate it, but you got to show me something else. And it's the thing I appreciate, though, is it's not like Kawhi came out of nowhere and suddenly he's like, wow, he's injured all the time. We saw in the Raptors run to the title, they were basically treating him like a baseball pitcher. Just get us to the playoffs. We'll rest you as much as we need. You know, he's had the injury problem. So it wasn't an unknown commodity that he might be injured. So that's why I cut him some slack. I don't feel the same way like Stephen A. Smith does, where, and maybe even Clippers fans do, where it's like, you know, Kawhi is unreliable and whatever. Like, I'm not mad when you show me who you are, and he's been in injured players going back to the San Antonio days. Like, it might still be connected with that. So he's had a good career. He helped bring the Clippers even further into relevance. And he was there when they, you know, made it to the conference finals, whether he was playing or not. So I don't feel like, oh, it's been a total disaster, because I think you take the shot. I think you look and say, this is our chance to become a relevant, legitimate franchise. And it just hasn't worked out.
Kawhi has definitely really helped the Clipper. He helps every team he's on. He's just a really good player, especially with his defense.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go back to the Lakers drafting Bronny James at 55. Do you think he'll be more of like a role player, like closer to the sixth man on the team, or much higher in the depth chart?
I think with the team, I think he'll be closer to a sixth man, or just see what he is. You know, it's almost like in those video games, you just kind of like, okay, yeah, I'll trade for this guy. Let's see what we have here. You know, he does have the connections. And the other thing I think we can't forget is, in some ways, it's a miracle that he's alive to begin with.
Yeah.
So I'm not too harsh on his college career, because he very well could have died from the cardiac episode that he had. So I think he's probably a better player than he showed in college, because how long after, you know, a major cardiac event was he playing? And then I've heard reports that he was kind of playing out of position at USC. So he very well may turn out to be a serviceable NBA rotation player. And if that helps the Lakers, great. But like we're seeing with the Knicks, there is something to be said for chemistry, and the fact that, you know, his dad is going to be there might help his development. So let's just see what he is. But I think the good news is he's coming into a situation where they're not expecting him to be, let's say, you know, Lonzo Ball when the Lakers got Lonzo Ball. Just like see what he is. At best, he's a serviceable NBA player, and you got a steal in the draft, you got someone serviceable in the draft. And at worst, it's a PR stunt where, hey, it's LeBron's son playing on the Lakers as they continue to do whatever the Lakers have done outside of the, you know, 2020 championship.
Yeah, and like going back to that 2020 championship, that team was pretty good. But do you think like the bubble affected it more and was helpful for them to win the championship?
Yeah, I think it helped. I think, you know, ending the season when it did, I feel. This is kind of hypocritical to say, because the Dodgers also won a championship that year, but I almost put those titles in kind of two different categories, because in baseball, at least in the World Series or the later rounds, you did have fans there. So you had that. There was travel involved, because while there were no fans, they were traveling between different cities. And then baseball inherently has, you know, home field advantage, because you can bat, you know, last if you're the home team, things like that.
Yeah.
I think it did help the Lakers, because if you think about it, all of the elements that we associate with the NBA playoffs were lacking, except the basketball. You know, we didn't have home court advantage. We didn't have the travel. We didn't have, because the season took a pause off, you didn't have the fatigue of the regular season ends. Now we're immediately into the playoffs, you know? So yeah, I think it helped. And to me, it feels more like a tournament championship than it does, you know, a continuation of that season, even though they were a good team, you know, but all the elements weren't necessarily there that we would look at and say, yeah, this is one-to-one a normal, you know, quote unquote NBA championship. And it doesn't help that everything around that has been a play-in tournament or missing the playoffs. I think that's really what hurts them more than just the bubble title. It's the fact that under normal circumstances, this is a team that is at best, you know, a seven seed winning a home play-in game to advance into the playoffs. So you don't have the, well, they did make it to, and yeah, they did make it to the conference finals against the Nuggets, but the path is so hard when you're constantly having to grind through top teams, no home court advantage. Yeah,
and I definitely think the Lakers and Clippers both suffer from injuries like every year, like some mainly crucial injuries. But yeah, you mentioned that 2023 conference finals run. Did you ever have like a thought that they might actually win another one?
No, not at all. you want the honest truth? No, I know that you have LeBron. You have all these great players, but I don't think you can treat the NBA playoffs like you do baseball or football. There is a certain level of respect that has to be given to seeding, to where you finish in the regular season. And I think that it's different in basketball. Yes, the Mavericks made it to the NBA finals as a five seed. Congratulations to them. And yes, the Miami Heat made it as an eight seed.
Yeah, eight seed, yeah.
But Yeah, but there are certain factors that go into that that make those rarities. Those aren't normal things that occur. And yeah, we're seeing a little bit more of it with, you know, lower seeds advancing, but I think there's something procedural that's baked into basketball because there aren't the variables like you have in baseball where, hey, if we have a starting pitcher going for the, you know, this day, they could get hot, or we just ride this one or two hands to a World Series or a championship, or a bat gets hot, or hockey where you have the goalies. Because it's basketball 5-on-5, you don't have like one variable that can just change everything. It makes it so that how you do in the regular season does help you more, you know. And for example, the Miami Heat, yes, they were an 8 seed, but that's partly because of the play-in. They were really a 7 seed that, you know, barely missed it as a 6 seed. So, you know, some of those things get a little wacky.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I like the play-in tournament that much since, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm torn on it. The more I see of it, the more I enjoy it. But I appreciate the idea that, and this is kind of a nerdy sidebar of mine, but I'm like a fan of playoff formats. I love studying playoff formats and being like, does this reward the best team? How does this work? You know, and I appreciate the fact that because the floor is lowered, it actually raises the ceiling. And what I mean by that is because you're adding 10 teams now, there's an incentive to finish top 6 that there wasn't before. So that part I appreciate. The parts I don't necessarily like, the idea that a team like we saw with the Bulls or name some other franchise that should be probably tanking is 2 wins away from making the playoffs, or, and I'm not just saying this because the Clippers are here, but, you know, a situation like the New Orleans Pelicans who had a losing record end up making it as the 8 seed because they win the play-in tournament. That part feels a little bit cheap at the bottom, but I do like that it's made the regular season matter more because teams are fighting for the top 6. And I do think it's helped tanking because if you're a half competent basketball franchise, including the Bulls, who arguably are not really trying that hard and a lot of turmoil, you can still make the play-in tournament for a few days. So I like that part of it, but the idea that a 10 seed could be rewarded with making the playoffs so they get hot for 2 days, I don't like that part of it.
Yeah, and the tanking, do you think that like actually helps with the whole draft lottery? Because like the Pistons have got screwed over the past 2 years with that. So
ooh, Tyson, you have found another one of my nerdy areas of expertise, the draft lottery. I don't think it helps anymore because the NBA said, we're going to make this as random as possible.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we go way back in the day, this is before you were born and really before I was born, the way they used to do the draft lottery after the envelope debacle where they said, okay, maybe having the commissioner just open envelopes inside of a drum isn't the you know, fairest way to do this. I believe the format was they used to have just 60 ping pong balls and each team, you know, had a certain number of ping pong balls with the team logo on it or whatever. The Orlando Magic had won, and they ended up winning that draft lottery with one ping pong ball. So they blew it up and said, wow. Okay. So now it's like a game of bingo, basically. But what the NBA realized is teams are still, shout out to Sam Hinkie in the process, are still going to just try to go to the bottom as fast as possible to get the most combinations instead of, you know, what out of it, whatever it is out of 60, it's, you know, this many number combinations out of 1,000. So the NBA a few years ago said, this is getting ridiculous. We just need to make it as random as possible. So I believe it's the worst 4 teams basically have the same odds. So it means that if you tank, hey, the worst you can do is basically the same odds as 4 other bad teams. Take into account you're only, let's say, what are there, 16 teams and like 15 per conference? 10 make the play in. So are you really that bad that you're going to be, you know, with 10 other of the worst organizations? So the math almost encourages you to at least try, because if you have try, you might make the play in. So I don't think tanking is what it used to be, as we've seen with the Pistons, but I think that's because the odds have been flattened and the teams who are still just all out tanking, I'm not going to say that they can't do math, but it's not the incentive that it once was. So why not, you know, at least try, or just get as many picks as you can so that even if you lose, you have more shots to either get a good player or to be number one in the lottery.
Yeah, I didn't really like think of the mathematical aspect of it like you did, but yeah, obviously it hasn't helped the Pistons. Their pick this year at number five was definitely a shocker with Ron Holland. Did you like know anything about him? Because I didn't, because he came out of the G League. But
no, I didn't. But it's interesting to see how college basketball has sort of changed, and the draft has changed. I was listening to a podcast recently talking about the idea that, for the first time in history, we knew more names and stories coming out of the WNBA draft than we did about the NBA draft, you know? So, it's interesting to see how that's changed, and with one and done. And, you know, you can almost go back to LeVar Ball, who said, you know, my sons aren't going to participate after Lonzo, you know, my sons are going to go overseas. And then we had the ripple effect of saying, wait a minute. If guys can make money with this, let's start the G League at night. And then you had, you know, name, image, and likeness in college sports. So I think it's just fascinating to see players that we haven't heard of, that haven't played in college that we know of, or even played overseas that we've heard of, just showing up in the top five of the draft. And hey, if the Pistons think they found somebody, you know, good on them.
Yeah, I had never heard of him. And then the French are obviously doing something over there. Victor Wembanyama last year, then two top two picks, three in the top six with Reese Achet, Sar, and I think his name was like I don't know how to pronounce it, but it started with an S. Do you think France? No, it was the guy the Hornets guy. Got. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In the top six, they had three of the top six picks. I just feel like, do you think France is going to be really like competitive in like the Olympics or in any other way of basketball?
Yeah, I think it's France, but not just France. I think it's world basketball in general. It's interesting to sort of see a convergence. We're on one end, you know, we're watching hockey, the Florida Panthers beating the Edmonton Oilers, and it's like 31 years since a Canadian team won,
won
the Stanley Cup. But then on the other end, you look at basketball, and you see, look, Joel Embiid, MVP, Jokic, MVP, SGA, Canadian, French people going in the draft. And it's almost as if, you know, as in hockey, you know, we're starting to become this force. The NBA, our sport, ironically invented by a Canadian, by the way, is sort of becoming a more international game. And don't look now, but, you know, we're kind of losing the foothold, the dominant foothold we had on basketball. You know, the game has become more international. I think that there's an overlap in terms of culture and gameplay with soccer, and it's an easy sport to understand. You know, it's not like American football that's super complicated. It's not hockey, where for the most part certain markets and, you know, certain climates are going to be more reticent to play it than others, because you kind of need, you know, the technology if you're in the desert somewhere or whatever to have ice. But it's a simple game to understand, so there is that global appeal. And it, you know, baseball as well in certain countries, but it's an easy game. Throw the ball in the net. Soccer is an easy sport. Kick the ball in the net. So I think that over the past few years we've seen not just Europeans but the world becoming more and more fluent in producing good basketball talent. So I think France, I think you know, Serbia with Germany won the World Cup. So I think the U.S. better watch its back, because, you know, as much as we're good at it and we invented the sport, don't look now, but other countries are coming, you know, Tyson. You know, if you're in
that, yeah, all the countries are on a come up. Like, even in, I think Japan like beat the U.S. in football or something. I saw a few days
I saw
ago.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. By like a lot.
I was watching I was watching the first half highlights of it. It was like the Michigan offensive line. It was, I believe it was 21-0 at one point. Like they came out to play. So, wow. You know, as this is the downside, I guess, of, you know, sports becoming more global. You know, everyone's figuring out the games. It's like, oh, USA's you just can't just walk up and be like, hey, we got this in the bag.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then you look at the Spurs draft, they had Stephon Castle at four to pair with Wembanyama as point guard. And then they took Rob Dillingham at eight, another point guard. So they trade him away for a 2031 pick to the Timberwolves, who I think stole that pick. Because 2031, that's like a seventh grader or a sixth grader now.
Exactly.
So,
but yeah, watch until that seventh grader, you know, ends up being a missing piece, you know?
Yeah, that I just can't imagine like trading for a 2031 unprotected first round pick. Like, what? But they did draft two point guards. So, I mean, I guess it makes sense, but.
Yeah. And no disrespect to Jeremy Sochan, but it was clear that the Spurs needed someone to give Wembanyama the ball. Like, I was watching some highlights earlier in the year. I didn't watch as much later, but there are times where it's like there's a 7'3", 7'4" man in the post. How are you missing the wide open pass to him? So it's probably a good idea to get a point guard, get a facilitator in there who can keep things moving and knows the role. Cause Jeremy Sochan, who started the season for the Spurs, was a converted power forward they had in there running the point. So you got your big man. He can defend, he can score. Now get some people around him who can give him the basketball and, you know, highlight his talents. And then to the draft pick point, you never know. I was just watching a video recently talking about how when we talked about at the beginning, the big three trade where you had, well, it was Jason Terry and then Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett went to the Nets, and these draft picks were thrown in like, oh yeah, you know, down the line or whatever. And either they directly or indirectly turned into Tatum, Brown, and Derek White. So you never know these draft picks down the line. As we get closer, you suddenly say, ah, it turns out the 2031 draft was pretty loaded, or somebody trades for something. You know, you never know what happens with the picks, but it is a long way away.
Yeah, that's a very long way away. And Stephon Castle, I think, was the perfect pick because his three-point percentage wasn't very good at UConn. He was mainly a passer, I'm pretty sure. So if they can get Wemby the ball, they could possibly be one of those like 10 teams that have a shot at the play-in.
Yeah, and a national championship, by the way, who played with Donovan Klingon, the big man. And played under I'm blanking on names. You can see I'm tired after our week at camp. Dan Hurley. So yeah, sometimes those are the underrated people where you look at them and you say, well, maybe they're not this high-flying elite prospect, but there's something to be said for winning. Look at Jalen Brunson, you know?
Yeah. Definitely. And I think the Timberwolves definitely, I think, won this draft with the Rob Dillingham, and then they got Shaedon Sharpe towards the end of – or Terrence Shannon Sharpe towards the end of the draft, who – I mean, had some issues at Illinois with like legal stuff, but if he can not do that off the court and he can stay on the court, he'll be a very good player for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, and I like the Dillingham pick as well because, you know, our friend Mike Connolly isn't necessarily getting any younger. So looking ahead for the future and saying, hey, you know, here's somebody else who can maybe run the offense for us as we kind of bridge generations because, you know, Cat isn't exactly an old player, but he's not a young player as well. But looking ahead and not just saying this is the team we have right now, this is what we're going to do, kind of saying, hey, what's the next step? Because with Ant-Man, our window is going to be a little larger than just the next couple years. So who can we put around him as we kind of move forward?
Yeah, I see the Timberwolves being a bigger threat this year than they were last year with the new pickups they got, and I think they could have a chance at making the finals or possibly winning it.
Yeah, we'll see. I think so. I don't. My big question is, what happened to the Nuggets? Was that a bit of a fluke, or was that the window closing? You know, are these the Bucks or the Spurs of the 2000s, where they weren't necessarily the every year there are back-to-back repeating champions, but they were always around? Or was it like the Milwaukee Bucks, where it turns out that they kind of got their one title in the window between other teams dominating, you know?
Yeah, I don't think the Nuggets are done yet. I think they were just – they had a long season. They were tired. Jokic was playing way too many minutes. I think their pickup with Daron Holmes will be very good to get Jokic some time off the court, because Jokic, I mean, you're playing like 43 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Consecutive nights in a row. That's just, that gets tiring. And then Jamal Murray, I think he played good. He just needs to step it up a little bit more. And I think the Nuggets can make it back to where they were. And I don't think they'll be just like the 2021 Bucks, where they just kind of sit around and, but yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. Also Michael Porter Jr. I'm going to need a little bit more, you know, and I am not a professional basketball player. So I'm not here to criticize and saying, well, I could do a better job or anything crazy like that. But for what he's getting paid and also his role on the team, you know, you have Murray, you have Jokic, you have Aaron Gordon, you know,
and it's a pretty good roster.
Right. And at times I just need a little bit more than just him standing on the wing and, hey, there's an occasional three pointer, you know, let him take over a bit at the time.
Yeah. And then Christian Braun, he can start stepping up for the Nuggets and hopefully get him back to the finals. It'd be nice to see as a Nuggets fan.
Yeah. And I think the good news is the pieces that they've lost over the last couple of years are somewhat replaceable. You know, it's not as if they've lost an arm or a leg. It's we need another Bruce Brown. You know, we need another insert role player here who can be successful for us. And through the draft, through development, through free agency, you can find those guys. So I don't think they're going to be the Milwaukee Bucks, but it's just an interesting thought when you think about, you know, some of the teams that are starting to come up. OKC, who got better? You know, the Wolves.
Yeah, there's a lot of like young stars that are really bringing their team up and possibly push for a playoff like appearance or like better.
The Rockets doing things over in the corner. Like,
Yeah. They're trying to go for KD apparently.
Yes, so I've heard. I miss having the Rockets around. I don't quite know why, but there was just something kind of charming about just the James Harden years. You just needed that foil for the Warriors. It was just fun to have them around, just from like a almost a storytelling aspect. Like they were fun to have around. So I've kind of missed that. I know other teams have kind of filled their role, but I think if you look at it, not even from a sporting standpoint, but just from sort of the story, the narrative point of view, having, you know, the Durant Warriors or the James Harden Rockets type teams as a foil for whatever, you know, big dominant team there is out there, I think that's important for the league. So whether those are the Timberwolves and the Thunder for this generation of Nuggets or the Rockets or somebody, I think that's an important part of, you know, the competition in the league.
Yeah, we need someone in the Eastern Conference to get the Celtics, but I think the Pacers are on a good upward trajectory.
Yeah, the Heat as well. The Heat are interesting because I don't know fully what's going to happen with Jimmy Butler. I know Kevin Love opted out, even though he's, you know, he's not what he used to be. But I think we had that with the Heat for a while. But the question is, was it that they were injured or did Jimmy Butler just kind of use it all up and now he's on the other side of the hill? Because, you know, his early career with Tom Thibodeau, he was much like Josh Hart on the Knicks. Like he was being used up quite a bit in Chicago. Yeah. So, you know, did the knees finally give out on him?
Yeah, hopefully for the Heat's case, they didn't. Jimmy Butler's a good player. He can perform in the playoffs. So I think if they can get back there and gets him healthy, of course, I think they can do some really dangerous things in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, it will be. I don't know. They might need someone else a little better than Jimmy Butler, or like a clear, oh, this guy right here. And I don't know if Tyler Hero is going to be that guy per se, but maybe a Mikal Bridges type, or somebody who's going to be better than him without totally aging out the team even further.
Yeah, I agree. And then last team I want to ask you about here, the 76ers getting Jared McCain at 16. You think this could bring him to some playoff wins?
I don't know. The 76ers are an interesting bunch. I feel the same way about the 76ers as I kind of did about the Clippers in the Lob City era.
They just can't get it done.
They just can't get over. Just make it to the conference finals. That's all. Yeah. An NBA title would be nice, but there's just something to be said about we at least got to the edge of the promised land before we lost. I think Maxi could take a next step. I think that's where you look at the future and you say they're all in something here because Embiid's going to do what Embiid's going to do. But when you lose James Harden and in some ways become a better team because Maxey has a chance to fully flourish, I think he takes the next step, and that's the key. And you build around those two, Embiid, Maxey. You, no disrespect to Tobias Harris, you know, briefly Clippers legend, partly for the, you know, partly for the trade they got back, but you have pieces there now, and you have a little bit of room because, again, no disrespect to Tobias Harris, but, you know, the three on your championship contending team, he was not doing enough. So you say, we got Maxey, we got Embiid, we have young players we can build around, and we have space to bring someone in who's hopefully better scoring and what we need than Tobias was. And I think they could get over the hump. But once you get over the hump, hey, here come the Boston Celtics. Look at that.
Yeah.
Here come the Pacers getting better. Maybe a healthy Miami Heat. You know, so I don't think that they're I completely forgot about the Knicks as well. So so yes, I think they can get better, but it's a crowded East. So once they get there and they get a seat at the big table, you know, who's there eating all the food once they get there?
Yeah. And then was Maxey playing their point guard last year or was he at the two? Okay. So
I believe had Maxey at the one. Yeah.
They could put like Jared McCain at the two or something to get him involved, or he could be a good sixth man, but he's a good player. So.
Get that scoring.
Yeah, we'll see. Thank you for joining me today, Daniel.
You're very welcome, Tyson. I'm sorry I had to fix my shirt the whole time. I'm just looking at my shirt, and the shirt is just refusing to cooperate here as I lean under the table. So apologies to you and the viewers who are watching here, because I'm trying here.
it's fine. Thank you so much for the world-renowned Daniel West. Watch or listen to the Informal program on Spotify. Is it on Apple Podcasts?
Yeah, Apple Podcasts. I think it might be on Google Podcasts and some other places. I just sent I sent it out into the ether, you know, like a satellite or something like that. And I need to find out exactly where it is. But yes, Apple Podcasts for sure, Spotify for sure, and informalprogram.com. If you go to that website, you can also listen there and find all the fun links and everything. So informalprogram.com, that's spelled normally. If you know how to spell informal and program and then .com, You should be able to find it. Hopefully, if I've renewed the domain, which I'm pretty sure I have.
Okay, well, thank you, Daniel. Good plug there. Yeah, go listen to his stuff. It's pretty good. I'll be on there, mic'd up during Wiffle Ball.
Yes.
After our world championship.
What a comeback!
The 2-0 comeback is going to be talked about in greatest moments in sports history one day.
It really was. Right back, right up there, 3-1.
Yeah, a little better because we didn't even have one. We hadn't won one yet.
That's true.
Then we go out and dominate 19-5. So
we did what the Oilers could not. Look at us.
Okay, thank you guys for watching. Hope you guys enjoyed, and stay tuned for the next one. See ya.